one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, we got a solo pod coming your way here on this edition of the podcast. We're going to talk about the Phillies series against the Reds. Phillies finally lose a series under Don Mattingly. Mattingly was looking to make history, but fell a little bit short. Much of that because of our old pal Aaron Nola. We're going to talk about his start here on Wednesday. The Phillies are continuing to have an issue with left-handed starters, so we'll talk about the need for right-handers to start doing their job. But we'll talk about the turnaround from Alec Boehm and Bryson Stott as well. Gage Wood moves to Double-A Reading, and the shirts-off movement is sweeping baseball. And it happened in Philadelphia this week. We'll tell you what the shirts-off movement is coming up here on Hittin' Season. But first, tell your friends and family members about the Hittin' Season podcast. We are on all of the platforms, so leave a 5-star rating and give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, if you wouldn't mind. Definitely helps the podcast out if you do that. And the Roundtable episodes, this is not one of them, but the Roundtable episodes are also located on the WHYY YouTube page. So if you are not a subscriber to WHYY and the Hittin' Season podcast, I would encourage you to go do that because you're missing out on some fun baseball chatter on the tube. All right, let's talk about the Phillies series against the Reds. First series loss under Don Mattingly. If they had won their seventh series in a row under Don Mattingly, it would have been the first time in Major League history that a manager had ever won his first seven series after taking over a team in season. But our good pal Aaron Nola made sure that couldn't happen. So with these two losses here over the last couple of days, the Phillies fall back to 500 at 25-25. And despite their red hot stretch since Don Mattingly came aboard as the skipper, they're still 8.5 games behind the Braves in the NL East as Atlanta continues their hot play. The Phillies won the first game of the series 5-4 thanks to a clutch bottom of the eighth two-run home run from Bryson Stott. That was an electrifying blast from Stotter. Jesus Luzardo was outdueled by Chase Burns on Tuesday night. Burns is a really, really good-looking young right-handed pitcher who is emerging as an ace in his own right. Phillies lost that game 4-1. Trey Turner, a solo home run, the only run in that game. And then on Wednesday night, the Reds pounded Aaron Nola and the Phillies bullpen 9-4. The Phillies got it close thanks to an Edmundo Sosa two-run home run that got it to 5-4 in the sixth inning, but the bullpen could not hold the lead. Orion Kerkering gives up a big hit in that top of the seventh inning, and the Phillies go on to lose 9-4, but the Phillies did get a home run from Alec Boehm, his second in 3 days, by the way, to go along with the Edmundo Sosa home run on Wednesday night. So the Phillies' offense really was pretty flatlined in this series. They did not do a whole lot. Hit some home runs here and there, but 5 hits on Monday, only 3 hits on Tuesday, and 6 hits on Wednesday. 14 hits total in the 3-game series. That's oftentimes not going to get it done, and that is a recipe for losing 2 out of 3 against a decent Cincinnati team. That's not a great Cincinnati team. They're about 500. Of course, now they're a little over 500 after coming into Philadelphia. I think they both came into town with the same record. And so the Braves, so the Reds are a game ahead of the Phillies in the National League standings right now. I did say, you know, I think this was largely Aaron Nola's doing. I think the Phillies were down 4-1 at one point with Aaron Nola on the mound. His nightmare simply won't end. And this has gone back to last year. 5 innings in the game on Wednesday night, he gave up 8 hits, allowed 4 runs, 5 strikeouts, no walks from Aaron Nola, but the ERA is 6.04. Among 144 starting pitchers going back to last year with at least 100 innings, Nola's 6.02 ERA over the last 2 seasons is 141st out of 144 starting pitchers. Only 3 other starting pitchers in baseball with at least 100 innings under their belt since the start of last year have a worse ERA than Aaron Nola. And sometimes the underlying metrics tell a different story. His fielding independent pitching, his FIP, is lower than 6.04, but it's still 4.48, which is nowhere near where you want it. And that measures home runs, walks, and strikeouts. It strips out batted ball luck. So You could say the 6.04 ERA is due to some batted ball unluckiness, but the 4.48 ERA still tells you he's not pitching great. Even if his expected fielding independent pitching is 3.75, he didn't get batted around a ton. You didn't barrel a lot of balls up on him here on Wednesday night, but he's just flat out ineffective. I mean, that's really the only word to describe it. He is 100% completely and totally ineffective, and he doesn't seem to have any answers. It's the same thing every start. And, you know, we're all asking ourselves, what can the Phillies do about Aaron Nola? What can the Phillies do about Aaron Nola? Because it seems as though every start, he doesn't go more than five innings. Five innings is his ceiling because he just gives up way too many base runners. Now, no walks on Wednesday night, but eight hits allowed in five innings, gave up four runs, only struck out five in five innings, and the 6.04 ERA, it's unacceptable. But the problem is that Aaron Nola isn't going anywhere. You've got him locked in for $96 million between next year and 2030. He has a 6.02 ERA since the 2025 season began, as I've mentioned a couple of times now. And the Phillies don't really seem to have any idea. Don Mattingly said after the game that perhaps it's time for Nola to start pitching backwards. Well, if we've reached the stage of Aaron Nola's career where he has to start pitching backwards, we're in trouble. Because it's clear that his fastball is pretty unusable right now, and he's getting destroyed by left-handed hitters because he doesn't have an out pitch there. Mattingly also said there's not going to be one thing that flips the script for Aaron Nola, but it's going to be game to game, trying to figure out what to throw depending on the team and what's working. That sounds terrible. Mattingly is basically saying he's just got to figure this out. He's got to change the way he pitches. He's got to change from start to start the different pitches that he's going to throw. JT Realmuto after the game said he's just a small adjustment away from being back, but I don't see that. That doesn't sound like what Mattingly is saying. Realmuto said that the first inning when Aaron Nola set them down 1-2-3 showed that it's still in there, were JT Realmuto's words, but that he has to have his command. Realmuto said it's just the overall consistency. I think he's making a lot of really good pitches, and then there's times where he's catching a little too much of the plate, falling behind in counts. Also, sometimes making good pitches and just not getting any luck with it. They had quite a few hits today, Wednesday, that weren't exactly on the barrel and got a lot of traffic out there. So just a combination of command and then not catching a break when we need one. And I'll grant JT Realmuto that Nola doesn't catch much of a break, but really this has been the case for him over the last couple of years, is he has to nibble. The only way he's successful is to nibble. And you're just not going to be able to nibble successfully on every single pitch. And he's too easy to foul off. He's still trying to miss bats rather than try to get core contact most of the time. And I thought Tim Kelly from On Pattison made a really good point in that for Nola, he's always been great when umpires would give him pitches that were just a little off the plate, a few inches here inside, a few inches here outside. When he would get those strikes, Aaron Nola was unhittable because then he could live around the corners. He could live around the edges. But with the automatic ball strike system, with the ABS, those pitches will get overturned now. Every time a ball that's 6 inches off the plate that used to get called a strike, they're going to get overturned. So Nola knows he has to be over the plate and even more fine in trying to hit his corners, because he absolutely cannot, under any circumstances, throw a pitch over the plate because it will immediately be barreled up. And by the way, he's been at a 9% barrel rate plus this season and last season. Over 9% of the contact made against him has been on the barrel. In only one other season, back in 2023, was his barrel rate over 8%. So he's not fooling anyone. He doesn't have a fastball. His curveball's been good, but nothing else is working for him this year. And teams are just teeing off on him. And he's not old. He's not an old pitcher. I mean, the whole reason that Dave Dombrowski decided that they wanted to take a chance and re-sign him to a contract, the length they did, first, I mean, the length of the contract was just a factor of him being a free agent and that there were other teams who were wanting him, who were seeking him. But Aaron Nola is not an old pitcher. He's almost 33, still 32. He's going to be 33 coming up on June 4th. So he's got a birthday coming up and he'll turn 33. But that's not old, especially for a guy who doesn't throw really hard. Now, he has a lot of innings on that arm. But I wonder, I mean, the stuff still looks like it moves all over the place, but I really do think there's something to what Kelly is saying about Aaron Nola used to be getting all of those pitches a little bit off the plate, and now he's not going to get those anymore. And so now you're basically seeing him have to come across the plate. When you're trying to nibble on the edges, the outer and inner edges, your command has to be absolutely perfect, because when he brings a ball over the middle of the plate, it's like he's teeing it up for them. So what do the Phillies do with Aaron Nola? Right now, you just keep running him out there every fifth day, but he's 10 starts into his season. This is coming off a season last year in which I think he had, 15 or 16 starts. He pitched half a season and was hurt most of the season. He is, for the last calendar year plus, had an ERA over 6. I don't know what they can do here other than to just keep running him out, but it's ugly. It's ugly. There's nothing for him to hang his hat on. And he's just totally and completely ineffective as a starting pitcher, even as a number 5. I mean, they got rid of Taijuan Walker, but Aaron Nola has become Taijuan Walker. It's just depressing. It's sad. The Phillies also still cannot solve left-handed starters. It happened here again on Wednesday night and in the first game against Lodolo. They went up against a left-handed starter in Lodolo in the first game that they ended up winning, but they came back against the Cincinnati bullpen in that one. And then in this game here against Abbott on Wednesday night. Left-handed starters are now against the Phillies are now 9-1 against the Phils with a 2.24 ERA in 15 starts. And I saw Todd Zielecki note that if you remove the one loss that the Phillies gave to Kyle Freeland, it's a 1.70 ERA in 14 starts. Scott Lauber of the Inquirer noted that the Phillies are batting 193 and slugging 327 against non-opener left-handed starters. Okay, that's terrible. Now, you're facing Chris Sale twice in there. You had Robbie Ray in there, Shota Imanaga a couple of times in there. Mackenzie Gore always does a number against them. Ranger Suarez looked really good. So a lot of good arms in there. But guess what? You're going to see good left-handed starting pitching in the playoffs. As good as this team had been playing, this cannot continue to be, and this team expect to succeed in October. If these right-handed hitters don't figure out how to help out Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber against left-handed pitchers, this team is not winning anything. They might get to the playoffs, but they're not winning any championships. So I think the fair question to ask right now is the trade deadline is still 2 months away, 2.5 months away. Nobody's trading for anything right now. Although Dave Dombrowski did say that trade talk got started a little bit earlier than it normally does this season. But what do the Phillies need more right now in order to truly be a World Series contender? What do the Phillies need more? Do they need another quality starting pitcher in case Aaron Nola and or Andrew Painter never figure it out? And I think Andrew Painter is on the ascent. I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention Andrew Painter had a good outing against the Cincinnati Reds earlier this week on Monday night. Andrew Painter had a good outing his last time out, and then he followed it up with a 6-inning effort. Gave up just 3 hits in 6 innings, 2 runs, 2 walks, only 3 strikeouts, though. His ERA is now 5.77. Still not generating very, very little swing and miss is Andrew Painter. And against really good offenses, they've been taking advantage of that. But give him credit. He went. He had a really good outing his last time out, went 5 innings. And then in this one, 6 innings. He only had 68 pitches, too. They could have kept him in the game for a little bit longer. But Don Mattingly decided to get him out of there. But you've got in Aaron Nola and Andrew Painter, a couple of guys who have been inconsistent so far this year. So at the trade deadline, will the Phillies be looking for another quality starting pitcher? Would that help them? Would that help them most, probably, in their quest to get back to October and do some damage in the playoffs? Would it be another relief pitcher? Because Brad Keller has not been good. Jose Alvarado is kind of iffy. Tanner Banks has been up and down. Orion Kerkering had a real good streak there going, and then in his last few appearances has gotten knocked around a little bit. Joan Duran has been the one constant, and he's throwing lights out right now. But do the Phillies need a bullpen arm, a back of the, seventh inning, eighth inning guy to pair with Joan Duran? Is Brad Keller not going to get the job done? Or do the Phillies need a right-handed bat that can make an impact against left-handed pitchers? And right now, we're going to talk about Alec Bohm in just a second, but he has gotten hot. Alec Bohm seems to have turned things around. So the Phillies may not be in the market for a right-handed hitting third baseman. But I'll tell you what, I sure think that they could use one in right field. Because have you seen Adolis Garcia's numbers lately? After another 0-for-4 night on Wednesday night, Adolis Garcia is now down to 207 on the season, with a 284 on-base percentage and a 322 slugging percentage. That's a weighted runs created of 71 on the season. That means he's 30% below a league average hitter for his position. And he still has just 4 home runs on the season. I mean, I recognize that Adolis Garcia last year didn't have great splits against left-handers, but still, as a right-handed hitter, you need him to do damage against lefties. And against lefties this year, 239 with a 321 on base and a 435 slugging percentage. He has a 756 OPS against left-handers. It's 559 against right-handers. But just truly some dreadful numbers from Adolis Garcia. This is an obvious area for upgrading. But what's more important? At this stage of the game, it's a little bit too early to be talking about the trade deadline and talking about trades and making impactful moves, because nobody's going to be giving those guys away just yet. But I feel like this is the question we're going to be asking ourselves in a couple of months. What do the Phillies need more right now just to complete this team, to make it a true World Series contender? Do they need a quality starting pitcher in case Aaron Nola and or Andrew Painter never figure it out? Do they need another impact reliever to go along with Joan Duran in the pen? Or do they need a right-handed hitting outfielder to get Adolis Garcia out of here? Because I said before the season, and you guys all know this, that this was not going to work out. He has 2 full seasons. His last 2 full seasons told you that's who he is. This is who he is. He's doing exactly what he's done the last 2 seasons. In fact, he's been worse. Now, look, if he proves me wrong and goes out over the next month and starts tearing it up, then great. But I'm now looking at 2 years and 2 months worth of data telling me Adolis Garcia is a below league average hitter. And I still, for the life of me, can't figure out why Dave Dombrowski continues to shop in this bargain bin of crap when it comes to these 1-year deal reclamation outfielders. Well, he's been awful the last 2 years, but we think we can get him in here, we can fix his swing. When has that ever worked? When has that ever worked for any of these guys? Right now, if you ask me what the Phillies need most, I would probably tell you they need another quality starting pitcher. As much as I feel like the offense needs another bat, if Aaron Nola is going to be awful and Andrew Painter is not going to step into the breach and be the number 4 starter that you can depend on this team, and it's not going to be Aaron Nola, they got to get one. They can't have 2 aces in Zach Wheeler, Christopher Sanchez, a Jekyll and Hyde in Jesus Luzardo, who could be a Cy Young, who is a Cy Young contender, was one last year, could be again, and then have 2 guys out there with ERAs in the upper 5s and 6s. That will submarine your season faster than just continuing to run the same lineup out there that you have been. And the Phillies can probably make do with the bullpen, and maybe the bullpen gets hot. I feel like right now, this team needs, they need Aaron Nola and Andrew Painter to figure it out. But the biggest need at the trade deadline might be for another starting pitcher, another quality starting pitcher. But if they ended up going after a right-handed hitting outfielder, I don't know who that would be. There's probably not a lot of guys who are going to be available. And move on from Adolis Garcia, that would also be a very welcome move. Alec Bohm, though, and Bryson Stott have turned it around. So if the Phillies are going to be thinking about making a change at third base, they might be holding off on that a little bit now. In his last 11 games since his 2-day off reset, Alec Bohm is hitting .415 with 7 RBIs and 5 multi-hit games. 4 home runs in 11 games. including he's just really a blast on Wednesday, another blast on Monday. He's just really seeing the ball well since those 2 days off. And I guess Don Mattingly truly is the genius. And maybe it wasn't Elmo. Maybe it just was Alec Bohm figuring things out. And his former daycare teammate Bryson Stott is suddenly slugging the ball all over the place. Had the go-ahead two-run home run in the eighth inning on Monday night, one of the more electric moments of the season. In the month of May, he's batting .258. Five doubles in the month of May, with five home runs this month and 18 RBIs, with an .879 OPS in 16 games. His OPS ranks 44th out of 191 qualified players. That's pretty darn good. And his 18 RBIs are tied for second most in Major League Baseball in the month of May. Now, Bryson Stott was not in the lineup against Andrew Abbott on Wednesday night. Don Mattingly decided to give Edmundo Sosa a start at second base, the right-hander in there against the lefty, and Sosa rewarded his manager with a two-run home run in Bryson Stott's place. Now, I know Bryce Harper has said he believes Bryson Stott should be an everyday player. He's an everyday guy, and he's been playing like it lately, but you do want to get Sosa into some of these games, and he once again showed you why he's the best utility infielder in Major League Baseball, coming off the bench and hitting a two-run home run in the place of the red-hot Bryson Stott on Wednesday night. But Alec Bohm and Bryson Stott both turning it around. I think if you had to ask me which one of these two turnarounds I believe in the most, I probably believe Alec Bohm's turnaround more than Bryson Stott's turnaround. I think Alec Bohm has had more quality Major League offensive stretches than Bryson Stott has. It's not saying much, but I do feel like, and again, I'm not the biggest Alec Bohm fan in the world. I'm not the biggest Bryson Stott fan in the world, but this offense has gotten more productive since those two guys joined Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper and Justin Crawford and kind of pacing this offense a little bit more. But yeah, I'm probably believing the Alec Bohm turnaround a little bit more than the Bryson Stott turnaround, although maybe both of those guys will surprise us. Some minor league Phillies news to throw your way here. Gage Wood, last year's first round pick, has been promoted from low A to double A Reading. He's skipping high A Jersey Shore. And of course, everybody is now wondering, are they doing this because they're trying to expedite him up to Philadelphia? The answer is probably not. He was just overly dominant in low A Clearwater. He's throwing, 96 miles an hour, averaging 96 miles an hour on his fastball. Charlotte Varnes noted in a piece for The Athletic, I think the average fastball velocity in that league is like 93. So he was a man among boys. Struck out 40 in 26 and a third innings in low A Clearwater. So he needed to be challenged. High A Jersey Shore is not a whole lot different than low A. So now Gage Wood is moving up. Now, Charlotte makes a note to say the move should not be confused with accelerated development. He only threw 37 and two-thirds innings at Arkansas last year. The year before, only threw 40 innings. So the Phillies are trying to develop him as a starter. They're going to treat him very carefully, but they do want him to be challenged, and now he'll get that at Double-A Reading. It's Double-A Reading is getting pretty loaded here, guys. They have most of the team's top prospects are there. Dante Norrie, who's really hit a cold stretch. I think I saw he's two for his last 26, but he had been hitting really well for Reading, but he's in a little bit of a slump, but he's there. Arun Escobar is there. Alex McFarlane, who was with the Phillies for one day, but has been dominant in their bullpen. He's there. Brian Rincon, Carson DeMartini, all of those guys are in Reading. And Gage Wood will make his debut for the Fightins in Portland, Maine on Friday. His first start in Reading will likely come at the end of next week. But with Andrew Painter and Justin Crawford now having graduated to the majors, Gage Wood is one of only two Phillies players on MLB Pipeline's top 100. Aiden Miller, of course, is number 15. Gage Wood is 71. And Aiden Miller is not playing baseball. You're May 21st, still not doing anything with baseball. He's got the back issues. And we've talked about how much of a concern this is for me. I think it's a huge concern. It's a huge red flag. The Phillies keep trying to tell us that this is just being careful with him. They're being cautious with him. But I'm sorry, this is a big deal that Aiden Miller, their top prospect, a guy that a lot of folks were hoping would come to the majors this year and spell Alec Bohm at third base. Now, again, the need feels a little bit less acute with Boehm playing a little bit better now. But you really wanted to see him in Philadelphia at some point this year, certainly next year in 2027. But this is not looking good. I'm just not believing all of the, you know, the brake tapping that the Phillies are doing about Aiden Miller. I'm just not. The fact that he's still not swinging a baseball bat is a huge concern. So Gage Wood, really the only Phillies prospect in MLB Pipeline's top 100. And now he gets to move up to AA Reading. All right. One other thing before we wrap up the podcast here. Have you guys heard about the shirts off movement? It's a new trend taking over ballparks across Philadelphia. It came across Major League Baseball, and it came to Philadelphia on Tuesday night. It started in St. Louis, and it's one of those things in baseball that it's like the Angels rally monkey from a couple of years ago. Like it's something good happens on a baseball field, and it happens right after this new thing also happens. And so now these two things are inextricably linked, right? You had the Nationals with the Baby Shark in 2019. Now that kind of became their anthem. They started playing Baby Shark and for oh gosh, who was the player? Who was Baby Shark for the Nationals in 2019? I can't believe because my whole family is filled with Nationals fans. I should know this, but yes, Gerardo Parra. He picked that as his walk-up song, and the team went on a winning streak after that. Like, these things happen in Major League Baseball. So now I'm with the St. Louis Cardinals, who are 29-18, despite the fact this was supposed to be a rebuilding year for them in St. Louis. Busch Stadium has been ambushed by what's called the Tarps Off Movement. A small group of fans. This started when members of the Stephen F. Austin Club baseball team went to a game against the Royals in St. Louis, and they're all sitting in right field, and the right field stands, and all of them, like a couple, you know, entire baseball teams, so like what, 12 to 18 kids, took off their shirts and started waving them around like a rally town. Now, this has been done in college football games for a while now, but the Stephen F. Austin Club baseball team brought it to Major League Baseball, brought it to St. Louis, and right after these guys started doing this, on Friday night, this happened for the first time. The Cardinals won in a walk-off over the Royals. So there was a walk-off. Ivan Herrera delivered a walk-off home run that went to right field, right into the bare-chested kids. And these are boys, by the way. These are all men and boys. We're not seeing this from the female side of things, which I think is probably the right thing. So you have in right field now, all these men are taking off their t-shirts. It's growing now. It's growing in different ballparks after this incident on Friday night. After the walk-off against the Royals, manager Ole Marmol bought out the tarps-off section of Busch Stadium the next day and then invited the team inside the Cardinals clubhouse. On Tuesday night, the tarps-off magic struck again. In the 10th inning, Ivan Herrera hit a 3-run homer to beat the Pirates. And then he gave a nod to the bare-chested folks as he rounded the bases. And then he ripped his own jersey off and twirled it over his head in celebration. We've seen it at Tropicana Field. We've seen it in Seattle. We've seen it in Detroit. And now in Philadelphia on Tuesday night in the pouring rain, losing 4-1. Maybe it's the version of the rally towel, or maybe it's this version. Maybe it's the new rally cap. Phillies fans gave it a try. It didn't work. Phillies weren't doing anything on Tuesday night. But this is a new thing, sweeping the country. And now the Cardinals announced on Wednesday that the upper right field bleachers at Busch Stadium will become a, quote, dedicated high energy fan section open to any fan in the ballpark, regardless of their ticketed seat. The best news, shirts optional. So now in St. Louis, you are going to have a group of bare-chested men, thankfully we're entering the summer, taking their shirts off, waving their shirts over their heads. Now, I wonder if they're doing this the whole game. Like, are they taking their shirts off the whole game and waving them over their heads? That would be exhausting. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm guessing that's not what's happening. But now it's growing. It's a thing that's going to be in St. Louis. I don't think we're going to see it in Philadelphia again. It just... It, it was a very small number of people who were doing it in Philadelphia on Tuesday night, and it didn't work. So, yeah, you tried it. It didn't work. I think tarps off is going to be something that happens here in Philadelphia on the regular. But we are starting to see it now in different cities and different ballparks. And I just wanted to warn you, in case you're heading out to the ballpark, at the sight of overly pale, weirdly shaped, odd chest hair patterned men are walking around the park without their shirts on, twirling a shirt over their head, and you see a lot of them doing this, now you know. So just be ready for it. All right, the Phillies now have 12 straight games that are going to be very challenging. They had this hot streak playing against some lesser opponents, and they took advantage of it, which is what they should do. But all they've done is get themselves back to even now. Now they're going to be going up against some really strong competition. The Cleveland Guardians are coming to town for a three-game series at Citizens Bank Park. They have won 5 in a row. They are 28-22. Their pitching has been outstanding. Not scoring a lot of runs, but I would expect another low-scoring series here against the Cleveland Guardians. They come in for 3 games, and then the Phillies head out to California for a very, very difficult stretch of games. 3 games in San Diego against the red-hot Padres. They are 29-19 on the season, coming to play on Wednesday. Then the Phillies have 3 games in Los Angeles against the Dodgers. They are 30-19 on the season. Now, the Phillies have had success in the regular season against the Padres and against the Dodgers in those two locations the last couple of years. I don't know why, but the Phillies have done well in Los Angeles against the Dodgers, and they've done pretty well in San Diego against the Padres. So maybe they'll play better than we are anticipating. But the Phillies have 3 at home against the Guardians, 3 in San Diego, 3 in Los Angeles, and then they get the Padres back again at home following those two series, following those 3 series, pardon me. So 12 games against the Guardians, 3 against the Guardians, 6 against the Padres, 3 against the Dodgers. And I think for me, a 7-5 run in those 12 games would be a pleasant, yeah, I think that would be a pleasant and acceptable outcome for the Phillies. They split that, 12 game stretch at 6-6. I'll accept it. 5-7. If you're a good team, if the Phillies are a good team, like we think they're supposed to be, that's just, you shouldn't be going, 5-7, even again in a 12 game stretch, with 6 of those games at home, you should win most of the home games. So that's how that's going to play out. But a very difficult stretch for the Phillies here over the next 12 games. And we will get a chance to see whether the Don Mattingly magic is real, whether this team really has turned a corner, or whether they were just taking advantage of a little bit of a soft underbelly in their schedule. I think we're going to really see what this Phillies team is made of here over the next 12 games. It's a big stretch, big, important stretch for this team. It's only May, getting into late May now, and this is going to take us into June. But it's still, I think, a pretty important stretch for this baseball team for us to see what their DNA really looks like and whether or not they have the horses to match up against teams like the Dodgers and the Padres. We already saw that they fell short against the Braves and the Cubs. It's a shame they couldn't have gotten the Cubs where they are right now. The Cubs just got swept by the Brewers, and they are having a really hard time right now. A very streaky team in Chicago, but the Braves continue to roll. The Padres, the Dodgers are rolling. The whole NL Central is really playing good baseball. And so, the Phillies, this is not necessarily a litmus test stretch for them, but we'll get a real good look at who these guys are. And the last time they had a challenging stretch, they went on a 10-game losing streak. I don't think we're going to see that again. This team's playing better baseball. They're pitching a whole lot better, but we'll see exactly how much better they can play than they did the last time they went up against a good batch of teams in Atlanta and Chicago. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hitting Season. As you can hear, I've got a little bit of a cold, so that's why we're kind of doing a little bit of a shorter, more truncated podcast here for you today. But Liz and Justin will be back with you at the end of the week to kind of preview the Cleveland series and catch you up on all the news of the week as well. Don't forget, friends, again, to tell your friends and family members about the Hitting Season podcast. Show them where we are, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. And of course, you can check us out on the WHYY YouTube channel. Follow me on X at John Stolness. And please check out my stuff over at thegoodfight.com. Read all of our outstanding coverage at The Good Fight. We're doing a lot of really good Philly stuff over there, so you'll want to check it out. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.